And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. How's your Thursday going? I do hope it's going well. We're looking forward to an outside broadcast tomorrow. We're heading down to the ATU. There's a very significant conference that's ongoing. We've got influencers, bloggers, whatever they want to call themselves from the travel world, hundreds of them, hundreds of delegates around the county for a number of days. And we're going to be down getting a sense of what they're thinking, what they think of us, what they think of our county, and so much more besides. That's tomorrow. I'll tell you more about that a little later on in the show. A caller says they're going to offer extra support to Ukraine, and I'm fuming because my niece has had a child and has had to go back to work without any help with childcare. They should look after Irish citizens first. When I, where I live, there's nothing, not even a play park for our children. I don't understand it. Well, get on to your local government rep and ask them. We welcome you contacting us, of course, but ultimately that's where they the decisions lie. Is there any coincidence that an ex-SPFA leader from Ireland is now the director of the European Fisheries Control Agency that's pushing to bring in new regulations for fishing vessels that are unworkable and set up to catch skippers and vessels on the bycatch of their main catch, sometimes down to kilograms, plus or minus, over landings of hundreds of tons? This is where you have to guesstimate, isn't it? Really have to guesstimate the makeup of your catch. There is some wiggle room, but it's incredibly, incredibly tight. A caller says, I wish to say how devastated I am to hear of the closure and loss of jobs at the DSPCA. It'll be a massive loss to our county, which the ISPCA locally, I mean, they are merging into the national SPSA. My husband's a volunteer there, and I know the work that goes into caring for these animals and the wonderful care they receive under the staff in Ballyar. What will happen to these unfortunate animals in the future when we know from social media every day how many animals are rescued? Ourselves and many of our friends support animal welfare and are regularly adopting dogs and cats from there. Why does Dublin always seem to make decisions affecting Donegal? Well, it seems to be, from some information that's been forwarded to me, that they don't believe, that they believe that that centre is a bit of an outlier and they need something more central. So it looks, as I say, it looks to me like they might be moving a centre to the northwest, taking in Leitrim, North Roscommon, Sligo, and Donegal. But as I say, we're going to be speaking to a spokesperson from the ISPCA shortly, and we'll get some of those answers. Hopefully, we certainly will ask the questions. Whether or not we get the answers, that remains to be seen. Don't give up on our trains, Greg. I believed for 25 years and I'll never stop. Don't give in to big car. They buggered us all. Sure, traffic and bypass traffic has killed more towns. Yeah. Okay, but listen, hey, if a train lands, all well and good. All right, it is Thursday, which means it's jackpot day. We have the big Vision Ireland Highland Radio Bingo jackpot up for grabs. Will it go today? Well, the only way to find out is have a listen to the numbers and see. We'll chat to you in a couple of minutes. 08660 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Keep the pressure on, Greg. The housing agency are desperate. They cored my house in April. Still no outcome from testing. Told me it can take 10 months. I started this process in September 23. All boxes ticked. God bless the thousands behind me. Another, the Western mainstream media in all Western countries set the news agenda all over the world by highlighting what they want talked about and what they don't want talked about. And there's no point in them telling us anything else. For instance, they could highlight Gaza from morning to night nonstop till something was done about it. Sean Hillen, I wonder, can Sean hear me? Sean, it's Greg here. Good morning to you. Are you picking me up okay?
Yes, Greg. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good, and thank you so much for joining us. Okay, we're speaking in the context of the shocking news yesterday that US conservative activist Charlie Kirk, an influential ally of President Donald Trump, was fatally shot while speaking at a university, sparking a manhunt for a lone sniper who the governor of Utah said had carried out a political assassination. For those who aren't aware, Charlie Kirk, an incredible, significant part of Donald Trump's election, and to this day, or to yesterday, his team.
Yes, he has risen quickly up the ranks, and he's only 31. He's a millionaire. In just 5 years, The organization he started, called Turning Point USA, has raised about $100 million. He's been involved in conservative far-right politics at a young level for quite a number of years. He wrote a book called, quite best-selling book, called The MAGA Doctrine. And he may even have been in the cabinet office at the White House when Donald Trump was considering potential candidates for senior positions. He also traveled to Greenland with Trump's son when there was all that talk about America basically taking over Greenland. And he was also the youngest speaker at the Republican convention. A very, I think Trump actually called him the rock star of the movement, and other people called him the youth whisperer. And they certainly give him accolades when he referred to Kamala Harris, Trump's Democratic opponent in the presidential elections, when he referred to her as Kamala the Communist. So he had a bright future ahead of him within the MAGA movement.
What do you think this means for politics in the United States? Some people believe it's a line that's been crossed. Others think that it could make some difference to things into the future. But listening to Donald Trump's statement, he doubled down, blaming the left. And you know, I didn't hear any words from him that sort of indicated that this is completely unacceptable. Calm is required. I'm not quite sure a line has been crossed at all. It just sounds to me like this is just the way, tragically, politics is going to be in America and wherever next.
Well, it focuses. I have a guest here, actually, Greg, who's from Washington State, and I was speaking to her this morning about it. And she brought up the issue, the controversial issue of Second Amendment rights. And of course, Second Amendment rights in the United States means the right to bear arms. And for decades, there's been discussions about regulating the gun holding industry in the United States, with the National Rifle Association being so strong. This fellow, Kirk, supports Second Amendment rights. He doesn't condition people being able to hold guns based upon their registering of the arms or background checks into, you know, whether they're mentally stable. So it's ironic, and words could be used like karma, that someone who supported Second Amendment rights and wasn't conditional on how people could buy guns has now been shot.
I think there's a couple of flaws in that argument. One being that he is on the record having said, you know, condemning anyone being shot, but mass shootings and shootings are almost worth the right to carry arms. And secondly, the person that shot him from 200 yards with a scoped sniper rifle. And, you know, any changes to Second Amendment rights might not necessarily have kept that gun out of the shooter's hands.
Yeah, one of the problems in the United States is that there's no federal law regulating guns very closely. Some states, for example, New York and California, as I understand, have very strong conditions on who can buy guns and what kind of guns they can buy. But other states are more loose in that respect. And so there has been a lobby, as you know, Greg, to have a federal standard about guns and who can have guns and what kind of guns they can have. And it is ironic that 20 minutes after Kirk was shot, there was that shooting outside Denver yesterday at a school. There have been about 9 school shootings this year alone, I think, in the United States. So it might focus attention on Second Amendment rights and whether and could strengthen the lobby that is for stricter conditions on gun use.
Yeah.
As for politics,
I'm not quite sure. I'll just rephrase that politics question, though. We are in a situation, we see it in this country and others as well, whereby you know, political opponents are not now political opponents, they're political enemies. And, you know, some of the conversations you hear from liberals and inverted commas, how they speak of conservatives and vice versa, on mainstream networks, so to speak, the language is incredibly strong, incredibly powerful. I'm just curious if an incident like this might soften that tone. I did reference Trump's comments, which I don't believe did, but this is not going to be a tipping point, is it, on political discord at out?
I think Donald Trump, based on his record, is going to use it to condemn the Democrats and any of his opponents very strongly. So I think, unfortunately, I think it's going to separate political parties, political views in the United States even more. As we know, there's been very little handshaking across the aisle on any issues between the Democrats and Republicans. And something like this, I think, is so incendiary that it's going to be used by far-right wing groups to further their cause. I don't think there's going to be any, unfortunately, I don't think there's going to be any way in which this is going to bring the sides together. I think it's going to be used to further strengthen, an attempt to further strengthen Donald Trump's hold on Congress and Senate.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, it will be very easily twisted to maybe send in more forces into various cities claiming this is exactly why we need to do that. You know, I mean, unfortunately, nowadays, everything, even a tragic situation, can be, you know, weaponized or used to progress your own agenda. And that's very possible, if not likely.
Yes, and I think it was at Agenda 25 that... Project 25 that came out in the airwaves and on the media before the presidential election. And one of the issues in that, as I recall, was that the federal government, in other words, the president, would take more control of city governance. And he has done so in LA, and he's threatening to do so in Chicago. And you're absolutely right, Greg. An incident like this just gives him the wherewithal to go into many cities. And he's particularly handpicking Democrat cities to take over and thus have more control. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. This gives him some strength to do that in the future, using this as an excuse.
Yeah, it's funny because it actually strengthens the Trump side and weakens the opposition, even if the opposition are being very sympathetic and saying this type of activity shouldn't happen, etc. Okay, Sean, listen, thank you so very much for your time. That's Sean Hillen, who's an international journalist, publisher and author of novel Pretty Ugly. A caller says, just listening to the news this morning and when describing the death of a young family man Charlie Kirk as right wing, even in a death announcement, it's very sad. So we now officially call anyone who promotes family values and conservative values as right wing. It's not terminology I would use, but I presume that you would know that he wrote a book himself. Charlie Kirk wrote two books, and one of them was called The Right Wing Revolution, How to Beat the Woke and Save the West. So he himself placed himself very much on the right wing, and he would say, I'm right wing, and then he would refer to others as woke or libs, etc. So it's not the language I would have used, but he himself proudly referred to himself as being right wing. I think maybe if he'd have been described as far right, that's not language he used about himself, then I think you'd have got more into the territory of disrespect. But right wing is not a slur. I did note a few accounts picking up on that on X, perhaps not familiar with his actual book. And I think if you're going to make a commentary, it's always better to be as well researched as possible. But anyway, it's not how I would have framed it. I'll say that for sure. Just one other thing on that story, and I'm sure there's not a massive amount of interest out there, but the FBI very quickly came out yesterday and said that they had a subject of interest in custody, and it was, that information came directly from the head of the FBI. And it wasn't the right guy. And there's going to be some criticism, wait till you see, maybe even resignations, because they're going to say, well, were you still looking for the actual perpetrator when you thought you had him in custody? That's just going to be another angle of this story today, tomorrow, or the day after, but it's definitely coming, mark my words. A caller says, I think Tristian before 10 there is over-exaggerating his point. His reference that a father with a high consumption of alcohol or alcohol-related issues will have offspring who will have cardiovascular issues and other complications when they reach the age of 40. My father was a regular drinker and have absolutely no adverse effects. I know several others of similar circumstances with no ill effects. It's not a good idea to over-exaggerate the point if you want to get people on board, but I hope... You also noted that I kind of picked up on that myself a little bit, and I did get it clarified that in instances where someone is going to be affected by this, that could happen. It doesn't mean that everyone whose father drank is going to have cardiovascular issues at 40. It's like everyone who smokes doesn't get cancer, if you know what I mean. Half of them might. But so I think, I hope I clarified that a little bit there as well. And you're very welcome back to the programme. Very pleased to welcome onto it Pete Wedderburn, who's vet and chair of the ISPCA. Good morning, Pete. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem at all. Good to see you. Good
right,
to talk to you.
Pete, why is the centre in Letterkenny closing?
Unfortunately, it's a financial decision, and it's one that we really didn't want to have to make. I've been the chair of the ISPCA for a year now, and when I became chair, it was very obvious that the way the ISPCA was going, we weren't managing financially as we should be. What I mean by that is that after COVID, there was a real surge in animals being surrendered and animals being seized by our team of inspectors because they had to be rescued and cared for. And we had a choice at that stage, and I'm talking about 2 to 3 years ago. We could either turn animals away and say, no, we just can't do this, or we could put the staff and systems in place to look after those animals, and we decided to do the latter. And that was all good, except that it meant that it put an increasing financial pressure on us. And we, of course, hoped that we would be able to do enough fundraising to remedy that financial issue, but it just wasn't happening. So by the end of last year, at our AGM in November last year, I made it very clear to everybody that we would have to make very significant changes in order for us to continue as an organisation, and that the number one important thing was that we carried on doing our work across the country to the best of our ability, and we would have been at risk of everything coming to a halt if we didn't take significant financial decisions. And so we started to look, at the start of the year, we began to look at how we would remedy the situation. We run 4 centres as the ISPCA: Donegal, Longford, Mallow in Cork, and Wicklow. And they would make up the majority of our costs. And because we had to make a very significant financial adjustment, it became increasingly clear that closing one of those centres was the difficult but necessary decision that we would have to make.
Was Donegal the centre that was losing most money or the most expensive to run?
It was the one which is the smaller centre, and that meant that although it was small, it still cost a very significant amount of money to run. But because it was the smaller one and the newer one, it meant that it was... from an organisation and from a national perspective, it was the least painful one to close.
So are you saying it had the least animal throughput, if I could put it like that? Was it the least busy?
I wouldn't even put it like that. It was the one which where we could we had to cut an amount of money, and cutting Donegal was the smallest one.
Yeah, but I'm asking for the criteria. So was it the most expensive to run? You said no. And I'm asking then, was it the one then that dealt with the least amount of animals? The word busy is the only one I can find, but I'm trying to figure out the criteria.
Yes, it would be the one that it was a smaller one, like I said to you. So it would, although it's doing very, very important work, compared to the other centres, it wasn't doing as much work. And it, cutting it would be, as I said, it'd be painful. We wouldn't save as much money as we would save by closing one of the other centres, but we would save enough money in order to remedy our financial situation, and that's what we were obliged to do. We wish we didn't have to do that, but that's what we were obliged to do.
Was there any attempt to engage in the public to try and narrow that gap? Because I don't recall anyone saying that the closure was on the cards. You know, the people of the Northwest can be very generous. Was there any engagement with the public to say, look, this is a probability, you're very generous, but we're asking now, there's a 6-month window or something other along those lines to try and make it more viable to keep this centre open? Were any efforts made in that regard?
Yeah, well, the ISPCA regularly has appeals, and last year we had an emergency appeal to try to remedy the situation. If you see our social media pages, we are absolutely ongoing asking the public to help us, because we do get some government funding, but the government funding isn't nearly enough to keep the organisation afloat. So we depend on the public for donations. It's always possible to do more of fundraising, but we have a team of fundraisers and that's what their job is. And, you know, we did everything that we could do to try to fix things, but unfortunately it's not the case.
And what happens as far as the ISPA is concerned now with the animals in Ballyar and animals that would have availed of that space going forward? What happens to those animals now?
Well, the animals that were there have been transferred to our the National Animal Centre in Longford. So they're all going to be looked after just as they were, and they're all going to be okay. The work of the ISPCA will continue in Donegal through our inspector, our Donegal inspector, and he'll carry on doing exactly the work that he's been doing. But instead of being able to take animals to the Donegal centre, he'll have to take them to one of our other centres, and that's a complexity that's not what we'd like, but that's what it is. And also, there's still a national animal helpline that people can call at any time to contact the ISPCA if they come across a situation where they find an animal that's in distress.
So you have capacity in the other centres to absorb any animals that would require care in Donegal?
We do now. We do now. Now, going back 2 to 3 years, we were absolutely to capacity and we couldn't take in more animals. There was such a huge issue with animals needing looked after. That situation has somewhat resolved now. It's a little bit better. So we do have space now to do that.
Okay. And so the costs then associated with running this centre in... obviously, you know, the spend on animals, if you're going to absorb them into other centres, that doesn't count. Is it light rates, wages? What costs saving?
If you look at the cost of running a centre, it is all of those things. It's establishment costs, if you like. You know, heating, electricity, rates, everything to do with keeping a building going, you know, just like your family home, all of those ongoing costs. And as well as that, you've got the cost of the staff day to day, and then you've got the cost of the animals, like feeding them, carrying them, veterinary costs.
But as I say, those costs will still, if you do take animals to other centres, those costs don't count. Is there any plans or intentions or wishes to establish a ISPCA centre or a national SPCA centre in the Northwest in a more central area? Because I'm not sure if it were you, but I do know views were expressed. In fact, I believe it were you. Views were expressed at a recent meeting stating that Donegal was too far away from the likes of Sligo and Leitrim. So is this really the beginning of a move to establish another centre more centrally in the Northwest?
Well, you just touched on there the national SPCA, because that's the other thing, the big sort of remedy which is coming into place, which is that for years in Ireland, there's been two big animal welfare organisations, each having around 70 employees, each with a similar type of turnover and so on. There was the DSPCA in Dublin and then the ISPCA around the rest of the country. And so and when you look at the Charity Governance Code, which talks about how charities are meant to look after themselves and to organise things, the Charity Governance Code very clearly says that we have to regularly talk to other charities with similar aims and objectives as ourselves and see what we can do to work with them right through to the possibility of merging with them. That's in the Charity Governance Code. So when I became chair a year ago, I looked at that code and I thought, well, why aren't we talking to the DSPCA, who are very similar to ourselves in their aims and objectives? So we talked to them then over the following, well, we have talked them through the last year, and it turns out that they also can recognise that we can work much better together. For example, they run a Dublin animal helpline.
Well, what's the connection between that and the Donegal closure? Sorry.
There's no connection whatsoever, except that you said somebody posted a video from a private meeting that was discussing the future, and one of the things that came up. So what is happening is that the ISPCA and the DSPCA, they hope to form a new national organisation together. Now, this is in the future. So as part of forming a new national organisation, the intention is that we'll develop and progress a national network of centres looking after animals. Now, currently, you see, there's a big gap on the West Coast. Like we, as I said, our centres are Longford, Mallow, Wicklow, Dublin will be for the national one. Mm-hmm. And you can see, obviously, there's a gap there. So the longer term plan for the national organisation will be to see, well, how can we best service the animals in the Northwest? And where that will be exactly is something which is for the future organisation to
look
at.
But why can't it be in Donegal?
Well, maybe it can be, but that's for the future organisation to look at. And that's, you know, the centre is a wonderful centre, but the centre takes...
Well, can I ask mm-hmm. then why... It makes no sense then. Why close Donegal now? Why not wait until the merger has happened and then allow the new body to decide the best way to deliver services for the entire region? Why close this now ahead of the merger?
Because, well, the ISPCA, from the start of this year, we've been obligated to put our financial situation at a level which is sustainable, and it has not been sustainable as it was. We had to take corrective action. And this isn't a new thing. We've been working on this all year. It's been very difficult. I found it very hard because we haven't been able to be very public about this because we're very aware of the sensitivity when people's jobs are involved. And we couldn't make public statements about what we're thinking of doing. We couldn't do because we hadn't talked to the employees.
But there was no motivation, was there? And there's not a loaded question. There was no motivation that it would be less expensive to get rid of these staff now than it might be after a merger.
No, it makes no difference at all to... It would make no difference at all to it. The staff are being... the staff who have to be made redundant, unfortunately, they're being given all of the everything that they're due. You know, it's when somebody's made redundant, they have certain rights and employees have certain obligations, and we're fulfilling those just the same way as any other organisation would do. What? It makes no difference whatsoever to that. What's important is that the ISPCA, it has to be financially sustainable.
Understood.
On its own right, and okay, that's what we're in the process. That's why we're doing this. We have to correct our own finances.
Okay, I won't keep you very much longer. How was the Balliol property acquired by the ISPCA, and is it under the ISPCA ownership? How did you come to own land and building?
So that's a complex situation that goes back about 20 years. And what happened was there was a Donegal artist who worked very closely with a lady who was involved in the old Donegal SPCA. The old Donegal SPCA used to do a lot of work with horses and donkeys, and this artist was very keen on that work. So she funded the old Donegal SPCA, and then when the lady who ran the old Donegal SPCA, when she passed away, she gave the funds from those bequests to the Donkey Sanctuary in Cork. The Donkey Sanctuary in Cork couldn't accept the funds because it wasn't a charity, didn't have charitable status in Ireland. So the charity regulator made the decision to give the money to the ISPCA. And then what happened was the ISPCA At the time, the board then, they set up a branch in Donegal with the express purpose of spending the money from the bequest on building a centre. And that's what happened. And then when that was finished, then the old Donegal SPCA, that then became deregistered as a charity. You see, the problem was the Donegal SPCA at that stage was it had the money from the artist originally. It had that money, but it didn't have ongoing money, the high cost, the high levels of funding that are needed to run a centre. And so they then passed the centre on to the ISPCA and asked the ISPCA to run it. And we too have found a great deal of difficulty in getting the funding for running it. Mm-hmm. So that's the challenge.
The asset is in the ownership of the ISPCA. Now, what is the intentions? Is it to sell it?
So as I've said to you, the ISPCA will be merging with the DSPCA to form a new national organisation called the NSPCA Ireland. Mm-hmm. So the centre will go into the possession of NSPCA Ireland, and its future use then will be decided by NSPCA Ireland.
Selling it is obviously an option then, because if the...
I honestly don't know what would be planned for it. I think it's a lovely centre, and everybody would understand that its intention was to help the animals of Donegal, mm-hmm. and that's very much will be borne in mind by the people who are deciding, you know, what its future use is.
So you're saying that the... If it is to be sold, it would be sold with a view to providing care for animals.
Of course.
So it won't be sold. It can't be sold to a developer or for housing or for an agricultural shed. It will only be sold if it is.
I think it's wrong to talk about it being sold.
Well, it's not wrong. It's not wrong, actually, because the people of Donegal have a very, very big stake in this, and it was passed over. It was passed over to the ISPCA in very good faith, with a lot of money spent, with a view to caring for animals. So the people of Donegal have a very, very, very strong interest in what happens to this building going forward, because we're already losing a service.
Well, I understand that, but what I'm saying is that it's wrong to say, well, when it's sold, such and such, because the thing is, it will belong to the NSPCA, and a decision will be made how it will be used. But that decision is, you know, that's for future months.
It feels to me like it gets sold to fund a more centrally located centre on the West Coast. That's what it feels like is going to happen. And I'll clip this clip for when that eventually does happen.
Yeah. No, well, I think that's you're jumping way ahead there, because basically what has to happen is the NSPCA has to organise caring for animals across the whole country. The Northwest is very important and will be looked after, but how that is done exactly is something that will be worked out with time.
Okay. Thanks for your time. I do appreciate it. We'll find out as we move forward. Look after yourself, Pete. Thank you. Take care. That is Pete Wedderburn, vet and chair of the ISPCA. A caller says, I fully agree with Katrina's hairdressing in Letterkenny. You were complaining about e-scooters. I'm terrified of them, and we see them daily here on our footpaths in Buncrana. Why are they allowed to continue without wearing helmets and without bells to alert people? Beggars believe it's downright scandalous. They are allowed. They don't have to wear helmets, but they have to get off the footpaths. They've no businesses being on the footpaths at all. New regulations came out as it relates to the use of e-scooters, and they have to be used as bikes are used. And that means on the road, you can't sit down, you can't carry passengers, you don't have to wear a helmet. That's just a by-the-by of the rules of the road here in Ireland. But they shouldn't be on the footpath, and there seems to be very little discouragement of using them on footpaths. Personally, I wouldn't use one on the road, which means I won't use one at all, because they seem incredibly vulnerable and they're tiny because of the way people are standing on them. They're actually about half the width of a bike, so I think they're even more dangerous than a push bike. But they shouldn't be on the footpaths, you know, report it to the guards. And that sounds like I'm being very sort of authoritarian. I don't mean it to be like that, but it's only a matter of time before we get another story of someone stepping out of a business and being cleaned out of it on a scooter. And that could obviously be, you know, very, very serious injury, or even worse. You know, they can travel at quite the speed. But maybe that's just a few of us have that issue. It's not like the phones are ringing off the hook with people worried about scooters. If you've anything to say on that matter, of course, 086 60 25,000. A caller says, An appeal was made last year through social media to keep the ISPCA centre in Donegal going. Not everyone's on social media during the campaign. It wasn't stressed that the centre was in Donegal. I mean, if it were me, and maybe they did, you know, you need to get the politicians involved. You know, the government needs to maybe make more funding available. They provide some money. The rest is through fundraising. You know, I think it's a political issue that Donegal is losing its animal welfare centre. And I think politicians should be involved in that. I mean, let's not forget, through all of this conversation, Charlie McConnell was the Department of Agriculture. Is this under the auspices of that? I don't know. I do know, though, that the issue is going to be raised by Piers Doherty. He's been made aware of this, and he says he's bringing the issue up. But it all feels too little, too late, but we shall see. Why don't they get a permit for street collection all over the county for a Friday and Saturday to keep the place running until the merger? Yeah. But as I say, you know, there was conversations happening in Zoom meetings suggesting that they don't think Donegal's the right place to cover the west coast of Ireland. And, you know, that has to be, that's the elephant in the room. That has to be talked about too. Another, were people in Donegal ever given the chance to fundraise to run the centre? I'm not familiar with that, to be honest with you. Right, we've a brief moment to talk about a big event for AIM2. Delegates from Donegal will join their AIM2 colleagues for the party's annual national think-in next Saturday. Fine Gaels has been ongoing. Other parties are coming up as well. Rebecca McDade is chair of AIM2 Donegal. Rebecca, what's on the cards for Saturday the 13th?
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good morning.
Well, this is our opportunity every year where we all gather as a party. And like, it's great because it gives us the opportunity to be able to talk about our strategies going forward and to gather in as a party and as a group. So it's a fantastic opportunity for us.
How do you feel the party is in terms of its growth? I mean, in terms of publicity, obviously the party leader has got a great deal of exposure, I think, anyway, nationally. And there has been growth in terms of representation, elected representation. But there does seem to be a bit of a glass ceiling. The party's hidden its head off in terms of, you know, popular support in opinion polls. Do you think you're on the right track, or does the party need to evolve further to sort of try and build on the successes already?
Yeah, well, I think that's the whole point. We're building on the successes we've had already. And I suppose with every party and any up-and-coming party, we're in that position where we're constantly building. We have people that have joined us who have been members of other parties previously. There are people out there who feel like they're in no man's land, that they don't feel like they don't know who to vote for. And we hear that constantly. So they have had the opportunity to find out what AIM2 is about. I mean, we only narrowly missed out on securing more council seats there in the last election. So we would have had a lot more representation at council level. You know, and we want accountability from our government. So I think that the people are understanding now what AIM2's position is. They understand that we are growing, and they understand that we are here for the long haul.
What do you see as the core principles of the party then?
Our core principles are the life, unity and economic justice. That's what it is. We believe in preserving life and giving people quality of living. We want a unity which is not just about a united Ireland, but we've got to live together in this country. And we all have to find a common ground. Economic justice speaks for itself. We need to put our country to be in a position now, and our people to have peace whenever they are going out to work, that they will have money in their pocket. And sadly, that is diminishing with every tax cut that they are being given all the time. It's never ending. And it feels like we just don't even know when the next tax charge is going to come out of.
Okay, so that is, where is it taking place actually? It's on Saturday, is it?
It's going to be in the Glen Royal in Maynooth. And it's going to be a fantastic opportunity for us all. So we need the people to understand that we are constantly growing. We are here for the long haul. We are taking our new members. We're in a position where we are happily to speak to everybody, regardless of what your party politics have been and whether you have never been involved in politics. And we appeal especially to the young people. We want them involved because our young people are the future of Ireland. And as much as we need to hold on to them, and we have lost so many abroad, but we need to hold on to our Irish people and our young people here in Ireland, and they are going to be the future of Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we need their input and we need their opinions.
Thank you very much for your time, Rebecca. That's Rebecca McDay, Chair of Aintood, Donegal, talking ahead of the party's annual thinking next Saturday, the 13th of September. They have three members in the Dáil at the moment, eight county councillors, but I just wonder where they're going to build on that.